Got it. Is it recording?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. It's
About that.
11:04, the University of West Florida Board of Trustees bargaining with the UFF faculty unit. And I'm Dan Lucas.
I'm Michael Wyatt.
Jamie Sprague.
David Pilar.
Eileen Saunders.
Jonathan Fink.
Dean
Justin Da
DeBolt.
Justin Davis.
Melinda Lewis.
Chastity Hobbs, observing.
The one quick clarification, Chastity's our president now, so she's just observing, and Justin's our grievance officer. He's also observing as well. So Chastity's no longer has not been a member of the bargaining team. So it's just myself, Melinda, and Dean who are the bargaining team members right now.
Okay, so we have some stuff to bring forward. I know most of the time when we do reopeners, or even full book, the first meeting is more of a formality. But we have some proposals, and we're prepared to move fast on them. If y'all are interested, I don't know if y'all had anything prepared.
I think that's great. That sounds
okay.
Great.
All right, so I just shared them in the chat. Let me know if that works. I'm a little out of practice. I know we had like the Google Drives, but I think everybody should be able to access it in the chat. Article 7 is a clerical thing. Jamie can speak to it, but it sounds like we had agreed to include UWFID numbers, and that just didn't make it into the final copy, so we're just adding that in as a correction. And then we have a proposal for Article 25. We don't have anything for 26, and we're not bringing any other articles to open. Do you want me to share my screen, or are we okay just looking at the PDF? I'll go ahead and share my screen. Let's see.
Yeah, you can go ahead.
Michael,
share.
Can you?
Sorry, Jamie, what was that?
I was just going to remind Jonathan that you and Christine had had a conversation about Article 7 and how we had left out the UWFID, and then that I would fix it as a clerical error. So it's on those reports that you asked for several times.
Oh, yeah. Jamie, I think that we're happy to make that change. I think it wasn't necessarily even a clerical error. It was just something that we needed additionally on that report. And so we asked for, just in the records request, that was an additional element that we asked to be included. So it was.
I actually went back for Christine, and at some point we had TD an article in there.
Oh, okay.
So we're just fixing it. So for the record.
Okay, that sounds great. Thank you, Jay. I appreciate it.
Sorry, Mike.
Okay, and I can't see what all is being shared. So it's the PDF that's up right now, right?
Article 25.
Y'all can see that. Okay. Article 25. All right. So we're just cleaning up this language 25.2A1. Those, they're eligible and they're gonna be advanced into those ranks. I don't know if Jamie can speak more about that, if there are questions about that. But I mean, the main proposal is in 25.8. So what we're offering is a 3% permanent increase to, I want to get the language right, to anybody who has a meets on their 23-24 performance evaluation, and then a 4% increase to anybody who gets an exceeds on the 23-24 evaluation. And I mean, there's the usual language in there about, they have to be employed as of August 8, 2023. They have to be continuously employed through the effective date, which is going to be September 4, 2025. And then just deleting this language here, 25.9, about a previous salary adjustment.
Michael, the effective date, September 14th.
Did I misstate that?
Yeah, you said the 4th.
September 14th, okay. All right, so okay. Do y'all have any questions or discussion?
Yeah, I think, first of all, this looks great. Thank you guys for working on this ahead of time. And I just so I understand, what you're proposing is that this all of this would resolve bargaining, right? You're not opening other, assuming if we had no additional things to open, right? That
Yep.
that this would resolve bargaining, that the parties are not identifying additional articles to open, and that if this is agreed to, we would move forward with ratification.
Yeah, because I mean, part of our thinking is that we have full book next year,
Yeah,
and so if we really
exactly.
want to get into the hood, under the hood, dig in the weeds or whatever, we have that opportunity to look at everything. And then also, we'd like to get this in front of the board in March. Sorry, not March. In the May, is it the May 8th? No, it is the March board meeting. Yeah, so we'd like to get it in front of them in March, and so we can put a placeholder on the agenda. But we do need to move pretty quick in order to hit all those deadlines and stuff. So we can put a placeholder, like if assuming that y'all accept this all today and we do a tentative agreement, we could put a placeholder while y'all are ratifying it and then get it on the March agenda.
And that sounds great. We can ratify pretty quickly. We have that system down pat. Jamie, one quick question on the Article 7 element. Usually, if it's a scrivener's error or like just correcting a mistake, that's not usually something that has to go to ratification. Are you agreeing with me or saying that you, what you're saying?
Correct. I just wanted to put it in writing in front of you.
Okay.
All
Okay.
we're looking at, all UWF is looking to take is the proposed changes that Michael gave you in Article 25.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds great. So we're on recording saying that we agree that that's just a scrivener's error and can be corrected without having to send that for ratification or to faculty or anything like that. So that's we're documenting that here. If you want us to send you like a memorandum stating that's fine, but it should be
No, need. We have the recording. We're good.
perfect. Thanks,
Yeah.
Jamie. That sounds great.
And I just looked in, there's not even like a signature block at the bottom of Article
Yeah.
7. So.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. So I think this looks great. Just a couple of quick thoughts. We may take a caucus and just sort of look at things just to talk a little bit about since we have time today. One of the things we talked about last time is that on that merit raise, we've used the dean's overall evaluation as the standard for what's triggering between meets or exceeds, right? Where that comes from historically was we used that first with the multi-year contracts for the instructors and lecturers because first of all like it's a clear unambiguous standard. It's one evaluation everybody receives, right? So it has all of those benefits to it, right? So it's very kind of clear and succinct in that way. The one potential drawback would be that the dean's overall is not tied directly to evaluation standards the way that the other categories are. We talked about this a little bit last go around as you guys as we discussed, right? So on like both the chair and the dean, if you're a tenure track faculty member, you get evaluations on teaching, research, and service, right? And all of those have defined specific criteria and bylaws about what those standards are, right? The dean's overall is an outgrowth of those, right? And it reflects those. Dean Blair, you could correct me on this, but it seems to reflect those 95% of the time, right? But there's not a specific set of criteria that is in the bylaws about the calculation of the dean's overall. Is that, David, would you say that that's accurate?
Yeah, I mean, the dean's overall is driven off of those evaluations, and so the basis of the overall evaluation is still anchored to the department bylaws. But the deans do have to make a decision as to what the overall rating is based on the other three ratings. So the whole thing does anchor back to the department bylaws, and I'd say the deans really look at those bylaws as how to evaluate the overall. But yeah, there's a decision that has to be made at the end of the process. That is correct.
Do you I don't know of bylaws. I haven't gone through all of them, but I don't know of bylaws that have language about how the dean's overall is calculated. Do you know, are there some departments that include?
I couldn't speak to the entire campus, but I can speak to our college, and that none of our college bylaws do. I think most of the deans use the sort of preponderance of evidence process to go forward with the overall rating, such that if there's sort of a multiplicity of ratings of one type, and again, not all faculty receive all ratings. Some do not receive a research evaluation. They only receive teaching That's and great. Service. But we sort of look at the preponderance of what the scores are and then drive the overall evaluation based on that.
So we were thinking about these merit raises for this year, thinking that there might be a potential to have like an alternate, like to still include the dean's overall rating, but say that faculty could also demonstrate this through the chair's rating, right, as well. So like if they got the dean's overall, or they received the dean's overall was like exceeds expectations, or all of the chair's categories were at exceeds expectations, that either of those paths would be a path towards the a path towards receiving that exceeds expectation amount, right? Or comparatively the meets expectation. Another path would be to direct the departments to have more sort of explicit components about how that dean's evaluate overall is calculated, like the preponderance of evidence, you know, because, you know, the CBA directs departments in the annual evaluation article about that process of annual evaluation criteria.
Jonathan, yeah. Can you explain your rationale as to why you're discussing this sort of pathway?
Sure, of course, Jamie. So the rationale is that the dean's overall evaluation has good elements to it, right? That it's singular and specific, and all faculty receive it. The part that the reason why we're proposing an additional path is that the dean's overall in department bylaws is not grounded in specific criteria the way that those other individual headings like service, research, and teaching are grounded in those specific criteria. That's why. So this would provide and it would also give, you know, weight to the path to the chair's evaluations as well. So as I said, so this is something that, like I said, we're committed to getting this done today. Like this is not something that we're going to see holding up. We'll go up in caucus. It's something to kind of think about, and we may come back with just some language for you to look at if it's something, you know, something we've been thinking about. But that's not going to hold us up today. It may be something that we return to either in directing the departments to be more specific about the dean's overall evaluation, or in including this language if we would work up if that looks good, if it looks okay to you guys. But it's not something that's going to hold us up today.
So, can I just clarify to make sure I understand what you're asking?
Uh-huh.
Okay. So I know on the teaching, research, and service, the chairs come in and they give you a score. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then it's the responsibility of the dean to read through all that material, look at the scores, and then come up with an overall rating. I get that. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we've been using the dean's overall rating for as long as I can ever remember. Okay. I understand that y'all are looking for some criteria for how the deans do the rating, but at the moment we don't have that. So if we chose to go this path, I think what I heard you say was, and I'm going to just use this for an example, okay? If the deans was exceed expectations, then you would stop there, and that is the percentage of the merit they would get.
Correct.
If the dean's rating was anything other than exceeds expectations, then did I hear you correctly that you then could move to the chair's ratings and all three would have to match for exceeds expectations?
Yes, all of the so if the dean's overall is exceeds expectations, the faculty would receive the exceeds expectations, right? If the dean, let's say the dean's overall was meets expectations, and then you look at the faculty members' chair evaluations, and if all of that faculty member's chair's evaluations for that year were at exceeds expectations, right? The faculty member would receive the exceeds expectations, right? The reason we're saying all of them is that not all faculty have the same coordinates of evaluation. Some have, like, instructors and lecturers aren't evaluated on service. I think we may have some research associates who are evaluated on research and service, but maybe not teaching. I'm not sure. That there may be some people who aren't.
I mean, it's a minute amount.
Yeah, small amount. Mm-hmm. You know, so
Jonathan, in the past, I've looked at these over the last years because we had to manually gather all of the
you know,
performance evaluations. And have you been brought examples where the dean's overall rating was not exceeds, but then the chair's all three were exceeds? Because in my looking at things, that was never the case.
We haven't been, you know, this is just something we were thinking about in more of a hypothetical or a structural way, right? Of just wanting to have those, because we have our best set, just from my experience, the best set of administrators that we've had in a long, long time at UWF, from the chairs all the way up. I mean, they're really strong, fair administrators, you know, but there could hypothetically be a situation where a dean would give like an overall rating that's lower, that's maybe even in conflict, because the dean also gives those ordinal ratings. They give four total ratings for a tenure track faculty member, and say, well, I'm giving them overall because of some other criteria that's maybe not even based in teaching service or research, right? And there's not a lot of standard to that. And that's a hypothetical situation. It's not.
I understand.
A field situation.
I just wanted to make sure I understood what you were saying. I'm good.
So sometimes
I would say, Jonathan, I think all the deans, we feel that the anchoring point on the evaluations are the bylaws. So I don't think the current set of deans would ever take something that is outside of the bylaws and have that become a driver in the overall evaluation. Right. You know, our templates that we all use, they specify that you have to put in elements of the bylaws that you're driving your dean's evaluation off of in the actual letter that goes to the provost office. So again, I understand where you're coming from, but I think there's, you know, I guess it's unwritten at the moment, but the process that the deans actually go through is largely a bylaws driven process.
So it may be best to kind of direct departments to have more focus on that dean's overall eval in their bylaws, right? And that's supported by the CBA,
mm-hmm.
You know, about that. And I think the language that you said would be, I mean, simply if it said like a preponderance of evidence based on, you know, the ordinal ratings, just even that, I think, would be sufficiently grounded, I think, in the bylaws. So okay, we'll take that back and look at it. The only other
I have one other comment on this, yeah. And that is the language on this. There's 11 faculty here in the library. We do not get dean right. We do not get dean evaluation. So unless we change the language for this, we have 11 faculty that would not be eligible under the plan. And I don't know.
What did you guys use last year? Because chair, this is the same chair, language that we used last year. So.
Dean. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Dean of library. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm getting my administration mixed up today. Okay. All right. We have a dean. You're right. You're right. Our boss is the dean. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
I trust that. You. If there were 11 faculty members who did not get raises last year, I would have heard about that.
Yeah, I was thinking, Dean, I was like, I went to Stephanie and got the raise.
Yeah. I definitely would have heard from that. One of the things I forgot to mention is we did a survey a few weeks ago, just kind of, you know, about the kind of the merit structure of salaries, and we asked faculty, like, if their preference is to have like one kind of like baseline increased for meets and above, right? So if you get meets or above, it's 3%, right? Or do they want a differentiation between those two levels? Because you can imagine pros and cons of both of those those structures. And we had, I think, a little over 100 responses or so. So that's a pretty good response rate. It's about 30% response rate. And it was about 60-40 in favor of the split differentiation. So that seems to be the preference of faculty. We're happy to continue to support that. And that's supported by our surveying of them, kind of asking about that. The other things that faculty have expressed is wanting to see, and we're not proposing this to do now, but we've done a lot of recent hiring at UWF and plan to do more hiring, right? And so that creates some potential tension with compression and inversion at the university. So they would like to kind of see that at least looked at in the future, right? As we're going through hiring. One of the things that the structures that we've built have been very good, our SPE and PTR increases and our increased promotion structures at addressing compression and inversion. It hasn't been the problem that it was, say, 10 years ago. Jamie, I'm sure you remember that. It was a big problem 10 years ago. So those structural things have worked very well at helping everybody keep pace. You know, however, there's some elements where, you know, the market is really driving a lot of different things. So that's just something to kind of keep in mind. Unless there's anything else, we'll take a quick caucus for about 15 minutes, you know, and kind of talk about these things. But I'm really certain we'll be able to get this stuff done today, and we appreciate all of your guys' work.
And I just
okay. So come back at like 11:40.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Okay.
11:45. 11:45. Okay.
Buddy, I think we had 10 participants last time, but
no,
it looked Justin and
Chastity. Yeah, Justin and Chastity aren't logged in yet.
Okay,
but that's okay. We can go ahead and start. They're just observing. So,
okay. But it looks like we're still recording. So, yeah, I guess we can start up.
Okay, perfect. Thank you guys for letting us take a quick caucus. So what we were thinking is that we can continue this discussion in full book about some of these elements of the different, rather than like writing up some new language or anything like that. We're happy to accept the salary article as it's proposed. We think it's a good proposal. I think faculty would be really happy with it. And faculty recognize, we appreciate the university has really put a conscientious and conscious effort into addressing dealing with inflation and all of these things and addressing funds to faculty. It's very much appreciated. So we can continue and we can help talk with faculty and think about these elements going forward, but we're happy to accept Article 25 as written. We do have an MOU. This MOU doesn't change anything about content. Hang on one second. Let me try. It just kind of memorializes a couple of things we wanted to share with you for your consideration. I'm going to try and put this in the chat. So it just says MOU bargaining. Let me know, were you guys able to access that?
I don't have anything in chat.
Yeah, I don't see it yet.
Oh, okay. Might help if I hit send. Okay, there we go.
Okay.
So I can share my screen and just kind of talk you through it, but it's really simple. It's something we've written up just based on what you guys were saying, and added some things into it. So it would just share my screen if that's okay. Okay, so what this would do first in bullet point one, it just memorializes that we're not opening any other additional articles. It says that Article 26 benefit is status quo, right? It's just kind of memorializing what we just talked about. I've added in language in number three. This just mirrors the language last year where we waived the right to negotiate a bonus. This are a one-time non-recurring wage increase, right? This is language that if funds, because we're finishing up pretty early, if like funds were to become available and the university were to distribute or have funds to distribute that one-time bonus to out-of-unit faculty, this would say that it doesn't have to be negotiated. They could include in-unit faculty in the same structure, right? So it's just an additional waiver that, whenever the leg if the legislative session finishes and the university feels like they're able to extend a bonus to out-of-unit faculty, this would give them the opportunity to extend it to in-unit faculty simultaneously without having to negotiate it. So that's why we've included that in there. That's what we did last year when we were running out of time, if you remember, for that to being able to distribute those funds for a one-time increase, non-recurring. So we thought that might be useful or beneficial. It doesn't obligate the university to any additional funds. It just gives them that opportunity to do so. Michael, do you have any questions about that? Does that make sense or?
I don't have any questions about that.
Okay. And then the
The only
last,
thing,
oh, go ahead.
but before I forget it, the only thing that I know I would change, I mean, without talking to anybody else on the team, is just the party name and to say the University of West Florida Board of Trustees. But I mean, that's a minor.
Oh, okay. It may also be the case that like if that were if the university is of the position, like say we don't have this language in the MOU, right? And that situation were to arise, we might be able to enter into a memorandum of understanding, right, of some kind, at the time, say we waive that right to negotiate it for distribution, right? So if that's the position, like, we'd be welcome for to do that position as well, if that's the university's position, rather than memorializing it here. But we just wanted to give the university flexibility that if funds were to become available, that they could distribute that without having to negotiate it. Because we'll be in the middle of full book bargaining or whatever. The last one is, this is just language saying that the parties agree to consider and look at compression and inversion in full book. This is something that that faculty have expressed they'd like to see looked at. It states explicitly that this memorandum does not obligate the university to direct funds to address compression and inversion. It's just memorializing a good faith agreement just to look at it and to consider it. Clearly no funds are being obligated with this MOU. It's just saying something we will have in discussion and look at during the full book. I think that would be a good faith direct language to help faculty to see that this is something that we see as important. That's it. That's all that's on there.
Okay, does anybody from the Board of Trustees have questions? Okay, how about can we caucus for maybe what do you think, 10, 15 minutes? Maybe come back 12, sorry, 10. Jamie at 5? You just think 5? All right, yeah, let's come back at noon. Does that work for
Yeah,
everybody?
that's great. That's it. And
Okay.
we've noticed the session for 2 hours, so we're not going to run
Yeah.
any time limit. So we have plenty of time. If you need to take more than that, go ahead.
Okay. All
If
right, thanks.
UWF UFF folks could pop back into caucus as well, please.
Sure.
Or at least everybody on the Teams is back. Are we good to start back up?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I'm putting our we agreed to the MOU. Just the one change about the Board of Trustees. So I put that in the chat, just the one edit. But yeah, otherwise I think we win an award for the fastest reopener in
Yeah.
UWF history. So
That's fantastic. Well, thank you guys for all. This looks great. I can It'll be funny, we always talk with our other negotiating teams around the state, and they're like, "We're in year four," and we're like, "Yeah, we got done in one day," suckers, But thank you guys for all of your hard work on this. I think
Thank
this will be
you.
great, and it'll give us time to prepare for full book and think about, what
Thank you.
issues we may look at. I'll get these printed up and signed. Michael's been helping me with just some stuff for creative writing and things. So I now have the ability to send DocuSign around. So I can send it to Matamor's still the signee, right? Or
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah.
okay. Do you want me? How about I'll just sign it and send the PDF to you guys, and then
Okay.
you send out. I've been a little over exuberant with the new DocuSign. My wife's like, you don't have to send me a DocuSign for groceries. Like, you can just pick them up. That is not necessary. This does not need to be notarized. Okay. All right. I'll sign that and I'll get that over to you all now. Thank you so much. And I'll let you, and I'll keep everybody filled in on ratification. We'll get it scheduled. It's usually about 10 days or so from that.
Okay, great.
Okay. All right.
Thanks,
Thanks.
everyone.
Fantastic.
All
Good work. See you
right.
soon.
Thanks.
All right. Bye, y'all.